one on top.
Mm-hmm.
And put it.
Yeah. IDT, CBE. Our sisters, good morning. Today we don't have time. We've got two entities to make the presentation. And the first one will be IDT. IDT, I'm going to give you 1.5 hours for the whole presentation engagement. Honorable members, welcome to the meeting. Honorable members, before we can start, I've already confronted IDT. I might be wrong. I wanted to, before consulting with you, I want to send IDT back to Pretoria to go back. Because of the state of their report, there are so many typographic errors in their report. IDT is talking about trillions in their report. I don't know where are these trillions from. There are so many mistakes that the document, on my document, of which I've shown IDT to say, what is the integrity of this report? Because my understanding is that this report is not only for IDT, it's for the country's usage. Our children will be doing their research, constructing this document. And I don't know, I want to be guided by you, honorable members. But they are pleading. The new chairperson, I welcome the new chairperson by showing him these mistakes. And welcome Baba Samadot. They are pleading with us to say, can't we allow them to make their presentation? Because they have identified the mistakes. And they are reproducing the documents. But I said to them, point number one, it's a fruitless expenditure. That they must be noted. That must be noted. They can't even tie it because they're not done. And I see one of our new chaplain from KwaZulu-Natal that they couldn't. I need to be guided by you whether we allow them to present, and then thereafter they will have to send us new reports, properly typed reports, and then before they are leaving, they must collect all these reports from us. Because I won't file a report that is not correctly typed. I need your guidance, one of my members. We allow them, or what do we do? Madopa?
Thanks, Honorable Chair. Also,
Gayla will follow Madopa.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. I agree with you that the fruitless expenditure, we have noticed these errors, and it's a lot of errors on the report. But I think the first time that they made such a report, mistakes, a lot of mistakes in their report, I don't know what happened. And now we are hearing a new chapter, now they are problems on the ceiling, but I know I know the chairperson is a very strong person. I think let us give them a chance to say that they must give a report, and then after that they must give us the correct report, and then it must be last time that they do this fruitless expenditure, and note with consent because the report must be checked before it is distributed out. Thanks.
Thank you, Chairperson. I concur with my colleague for the first time on about Matlopa. I don't always agree with him. But I also want to hear what my own boy, Mr. Somato, is going to say as a new Chairperson. So I think let's agree with what you've done, Chairperson. Let them proceed. Thank you.
Thank you. Agreed? Thank you. I wanted to hear your voices. Thank you very much. CEO, welcome, Baba Samadon. Welcome to this portfolio committee. I just want to say to those members who contacted me before this meeting to say, what does he want? He's not here to come and analyze anything. He's here to come and deliver. And deliver in the true sense of it. Over to this Tembe.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you, honorable members of the Portfolio Committee and other guests this morning. We are really appreciative of the fact that you are giving this opportunity. As an entity that holds public funds, we always look forward to accounting for those funds and also demonstrating how we are meeting our mandate. Here with me today is the CEO, Uthembi, is a senior executive manager, Prof. Fries, and the CFO next to me. And right up front, let me say that we are profoundly, apologetic for the typos. And I do make a promise that not again will you ever come back to raise these typographical issues. In fact, we had our own internal debate because we raised this matter quite sharply. And that is why we only had to print a limited number whilst we are trying to print, the others, and noting that even if it's a limited number, that would actually be a waste, in a sense. That you are giving us an opportunity to reflect, though, on substantive issues, despite the language hygiene that you see in terms of typographical errors, is deeply appreciated, and it's also a very good omen for me and the new board. We promise that we'll work very well together moving forward. I also want to note that as we come in, we were confronted with what I think was an existential crisis, as IDT has almost exhausted the $2 billion that it was given in 1990, and now it was asking for bridging funds from the department and from Treasury, and that is consuming quite a lot of time as we had to rush for the deadlines, from Treasury around the same time. I will ask the CEO to speak to the annual report. And also, I look forward to working with this committee. And we said, and I said to our board, failure is not an option for us. We cannot afford, given the challenges in the country, poverty, unemployment, inequality, that we have to deal with. And I hope we will work together with the committee, we will look towards your guidance, we will work closely with the Department of Public Works and account where we have to account at all times. Just before I give to the CEO the presentation, I think and hope that we would appreciate the unique model of development and program implementation that IDT has and has acquired over years, especially that one of social facilitation, where you involve communities, where you make partners with the communities instead of coming in, building a school, building an office, and then you leave. Because I believe that the reason people feel alienated, sometimes destroy these entities, is because there is no sense of ownership. So without any further ado, I'll ask the CEO to speak to the annual report, and the CFO and Professor Fries will fill in, and I'll also fill in myself where that is needed. Again, thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you, Chairperson, Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee. Honourable members, good morning. Let me start, Chairperson, with humility to apologize to yourself and to the committee, and in particular to the Chairperson of the Board who is appearing before you for the first time. Chairperson Weiss, I do not think that there is enough gravity of reasoning that one may put forward. I just want to outline that we're beaten by time, and I take full responsibility, Chair, because I did sanction the printing so that we could be able to comply to Parliament. Chair, by the time we got your comments, we had already started. Actually, I think we even picked up more in terms of reprinting Mr. Chair, I fully accept that it is a wasteful expenditure which will be calculated and presented to yourself. Chairperson, I appreciate the opportunity you have given us to present our report. Despite that, I sincerely apologize, Honourable Members. Chair, we are presenting our annual report, and as the Chairperson had already indicated, for us it is a process where we account back to yourself as representatives of the communities that we serve, and also in terms of how we have set with the targets that were presented to you in terms of our corporate plan. The overview of the presentation will take care of the general information, which is information that the committee is aware of, our vision, mission. We will then look into the performance information on predetermined targets. We will look into the corporate governance and HR, our financial statements, and the high-level risk analysis, and as well as the recommendations. As I have indicated, Chair, that the general information we'll talk to, it's really to remind ourselves about the primary purpose of the organization. And the open code is to use its resources together with strategic partners in ways which, in the opinion of the trustees, will best serve to enable poor communities in the Republic of South Africa to access resources and recognize and unlock their own potential so as to continuously improve their quality of life. Chair, without going through all of those, I think for us that is the main important statement, which also begins to reflect the way that we do our work. The chapter has already spoken about social facilitation, which is the methodology that we utilize. And in all our endeavors in implementation, we try to make sure that communities that we work with actually participate and to a great extent can be less self-sustaining. The vision is to be the leading knowledge-based development agency, and the mission, which complements the primary purpose, is that the IDT, together with strategic partners, will enable poor communities to access resources, recognize and unlock their own potential for sustainable development. You will see these honorable members as we report through our report. Our goals, honorable members, that we presented to yourselves as we are putting forward our strategic plan, is to contribute with agency to government 2011 job creation mandate in ensuring that we build better communities. Secondly, is to assist government with the reduction of infrastructure backups and construct world-class school facilities in areas where learners and educators have been denied access to a conducive environment. And thirdly, is to rid out from the content of bureaucracy to ensure meaningful and sustainable economic development and growth in order to make life in the rural and other vulnerable areas a better and bearable experience by delivering redefined social infrastructure, measures, facilities, and networks. Once more, honorable members, this is a very important statement for us. We did present to yourself when we were putting forward the corporate plan that we have redefined social infrastructure. In trying to fulfill the purpose of the organization of sustainable communities, we looked into, as we deliver that social infrastructure, what would be different from IDT and any other service provider or social infrastructure. And we said, presenting to yourselves, that we will enable the community to be ready for that intervention, to participate in that intervention, and also to sustain that intervention. That is the redefinition of social infrastructure, which once more you will see running through the programs that we'll be talking to. The goals that we had set ourselves was goal number one, sustainable development. And the strategic goal statement is the implementation of targeted and people-centered interventions in marginalized and impoverished communities. The objectives would be empowered communities and integrated social infrastructure. Once more, the integrated social infrastructure refers to this redefinition that I've referred to, but it also refers to us harnessing resources from partner organizations so that whatever infrastructure that we put in place, to a great extent, it has pulled in all the different facets that are required in those communities. We've also put a budget in the waiting of that, which is the budget for empowered communities is 46.7 million, and that was weighted at 20%. And the integrated social infrastructure is 186.7, which is weighted at 37%. The second strategic goal is effective and efficient administration, and that entails IDT is an efficient and effective and relevant development agency in all our buildings. And as well as the strategic objectives is to ensure organizational efficiency, effectiveness and sustainability, and as well as the transformation. We've also put up the budgets that were allocated to that, as well as the necessary weighting. In terms of government information on the predetermined objectives, I've already indicated what those are. It is the alignment to that. I think the next slide, honourable members, begin to just give you a bit of background in terms of the growth in business portfolio. You would recall that when we presented to yourselves, we had the targets on the turnover and as well as expenditure. And this graph begins to show you how our portfolio has grown over time. If you just go back in terms of when we presented the corporate plan and the targets that were put forward, you would realize that we have exceeded that. And what is the reason for that? Mainly it is the demand from land departments to give us the portfolios to implement. And I think the committee has noted in the previous year that quite often the timing for giving us a turnover it varies. And quite often you find that we're given that turnover very late. Hence, you will see that from the target that we have set and what we have spent, we have exceeded that, almost doubled what was envisaged. The next slide, honourable members, once more begins to just analyse the previous slide in terms of how those growth have occurred, but also we're beginning to show you the women spend, the value of BEE, and the number of jobs. If I can focus to 2011-12, which is the year that we are accounting to, was that there was the 2.4, which was a target that we had given to yourself, and the women spend, in as far as that is concerned, is 600 million, and the value of BEE is 1.4 billion. The number of job opportunities is 65,215. We will be unpacking that 65,000, honourable members, because it is direct jobs created to IDT programs as well as the EPWP, and we think it is always important to differentiate that, because EPWP also accounts to itself and is not double dipping when that time comes. The next slide, honourable members, begin to look into each of the different provinces as well as the different programs within those provinces. I'm not sure, Chair, whether you want me to go through all of those or just to pick up one, and maybe we can pick up the Eastern Cape, just in terms of what is the work that we have done in that region. You will see that for criminal justice system facilities in the Eastern Cape was about 29.207 million rand. On environment, it was 87.277. Food security, 16.5. Health care and facilities, 324. Poverty relief, 27,518. School building 446, which is our biggest portfolio in the Eastern Cape. And I think honourable members will note that in the previous year, our portfolio for school building in the Eastern Cape was going down, but it has picked up recently, hence that figure has gone up. Source and facilities is 1.4. Water and sanitation is 6.4. What is also sitting in the honourable members is an interest that I think you have. It's the RIP program, the rural the sanitation facilities under the Department of Human Settlement, which was a problematic program in the last year. Welfare support and facilities 13.2, and others, which are the small programs that will respond to whenever we're at, it's 8.3. We've tried to outline in almost all the regions, honourable members, but maybe to also go back in KwaZulu-Natal to show you that KwaZulu-Natal has been the biggest portfolio on school program with more than a billion rand expenditure in the years that we are reporting on. The next slide, the pie diagram that is the honourable members once for, begins to show you the split in terms of the programs that we implement. And I think, honourable members, for us, this is one of our competitive advantages, because we do interact with almost all the line function departments, and therefore it becomes possible for us to deliver an integrated approach. We're able to go to a department that has not necessarily appointed us to say, we're implementing a school here, but there's no bridge. So what is it that you can be able to do to bring that in? And I think that is one of the advantages that we have. So what we're showing you, the diversity of the different programs, and as well as the alignment of that diversity to the priorities of government. The next slide is just to show you how we have done our performance evaluation, what are the codes that we have put in there, and how did we calculate that, in case you want to go back and check how that was achieved. We also use this type of colors also in our dashboard. To show whether there is data that is coming in terms of under expenditure or over expenditures, and we're able to evaluate that throughout the year. The building of empowered and cohesive communities, so we're beginning now to measure, as I have indicated, using the codes that were spoken to earlier. The community-driven development project, we had targeted to achieve 13, and we achieved 20 out of that. And I guess one of the questions that the committee could ask would be, how did you manage to overachieve this particular project? There were two elements there. Certainly just from the IGT resources, we reduced the targets that we were targeting in as far as community-driven development projects. At the same time, we think it is progress in the sense that our land function department also gave us a number of projects that related to community development. Hence, we were able to overachieve that particular target. In terms of participatory development, as you can see, we had targeted 13 and we achieved 16 of that. The ward-based plans, the LAPs that we did, were targeted 15, we did 16. And once more, in terms of the LAPs, it's really to take the IDPs of local governments into local area plans where we engage the communities on those IDPs, because we believe that unless we manage the demand and the supply, what the municipalities and government can be able to implement and what the communities expect, just to manage those expectations, it's important that there is that dialogue. So this is a process of dialoguing between the plans that already exist there. The active community-based entities were targeted 116 and we achieved 142. The tested and replicable sustainable development models, we had targeted 2 and we did 2. The leveraging of partner and resources, as you can see, that was a huge under-expenditure, honorable member. When we presented to yourself, we have said that we would be able to raise about 110 million, but we were only able to raise that 28.9. The next page talks to the value of public mandated programs, and that is the infrastructure that we were implementing. As you can see, honorable members, how that went. Once more, we achieved about 164%. And really mainly the contributing factors have been the allocations by line function departments. Some of them, they don't allocate exactly in March for us to start in April, but it is during the course of the year. But we're very happy to say that we're able to put effort into the rollout and we completed those targets. The value of BEE spent and the value of women spent, you will see there that there is an underachievement. Honorable members, there is a new statutory requirement in terms of the triple BEE, and that is the certificate for triple BEE. And what you see here, we want to argue that it is not necessarily an under expenditure, but it is the ability of our BEE, the PDIs that we work with, as you are aware that most of the suppliers at IDT and as well as the contractors are actually black contractors. And you find that they've not been able to acquire the triple BEE certificate. According to the AG, we cannot calculate without using that particular certificate. But if you go into our database, the vendor management system that we use, you will find that we actually achieved that target. So we're reporting in terms of the evidence on certificates that is sitting in our records. Chair, we have not just left that way at that, but we have started instituting programs that will enable those service providers of ours to qualify or to get those certificates. So we are assisting them. There's a program that we've initiated to assist them. If honourable members would know, I think in the previous weekend there was an advert from IDT requesting the service providers to submit their CPP certificates. It's a process, Chair, and we're hoping to overcome that. The number of jobs, as I indicated, that the number of jobs we would want to distinguish the direct jobs that have been created by IDT and the jobs that come from the mandate sector of the EPWP. And that is the figures that are indicated there, which is 32,539,687. As the final one, which is the efficient, effective and compliant IDT, as a compliant organization, we are very happy the person to report that once more we have attained a clean audit report, and Chair, what is really pleasing us more, unlike last year where there were a number of matters of emphasis, and I actually recall this committee saying we don't want to see those matters reappearing. I'm glad to report, Chair, that we focused on that assignment and we've been able to clear the matters of emphasis that occurred at that stage. In terms of the value of management fees recovered once more, as we presented to yourself in the financial year, you'll see great improvement in the recovery of management fees. We're not yet at a level that we want to be, Chairperson and honourable members, but I think we're making a drastic improvement in as far as the recovery of management fees. And you can see the 100% that we have targeted and the 100% that we have achieved. The turnaround time for payments, for agreements, for recruitment and quarterly performance is also improving, Chairperson. And I know that the committee is very much interested on the turnaround for payment, which is the 14 days. Chairperson has been able to maintain the 14 days turnaround time on payment. In terms of sound governance, the board met all its statutory obligations, including the meetings that were planned in the past financial year. So we are sitting at 100% in as far as that is concerned. The optimal human capital, Chair, you will see that WISE was achieved 83.5, but there was also an element of savings that was introduced in our savings strategy that was committed to, which we also indicated to yourselves as we presented our corporate plan. In terms of the transformation plan, Chairperson, I think we are 90% in that process, and I would confirm, Chair, that we are gearing ourselves to complete that process by the end of the financial year, as was committed to yourself. Chair, the next slide. It's really a rehash, Chair, of the organogram of the meetings that were held by the board, and as well as the staff establishment, which is the organogram that I've referred to. We also thought, Chair, it would be important for us to just give you an indication of where we are with the transformation process. And as I have said, Chair, we think we are on target with that. We are envisaging to have completed the process by the end of this financial year. We have also done the organograms which have gone through the board, the previous board in particular, but also to inform you, the person, that we had a strategy retreat of the board where all these processes were tabled to the new board and confirmed and reviewed when necessary. And we are in the process of doing that, which will lastly be presented at the last board of the year in December. On the staff establishment, Chair, I think I've already indicated that although you can see the vacancy there, there were two elements. We have been having a high staff turnover, mainly, Chairperson, it has been due to the insecurities, people not knowing whether the IDT will still be in existence and therefore getting other jobs. I'm glad, Chair, to indicate that the new board has assured us with their interaction with the minister, which is the executive authority, that the problem of the IDT is on the radar of the minister and prioritized. So we're optimistic, Chairperson, that what you are seeing in terms of staff establishment and the vacancy rate will soon change. I think, Chair, part of the concern that the committee might have would be with the growth of a portfolio, which we are talking about 4.2 billion and the staff reduction that we are seeing now, what are the implications for that? And the board also had the same interest and focus, and those are the elements that we are currently dealing with as we complete the transformation process. On the annual financial statement, Chair, if the chairperson allows me, I'll request the CFO to take us through that process.
Thank you, Chair. If I can refer firstly to the revenue and expenditure summary, we identify the actuals for the 2010-11 financial year, the budget for 11-12, and the actual comp for 11-12. The management fees, Chair, came in at 90% of budget. This was largely as a result of the IDT's ability to increase the level of and the rate of fees from client departments. That challenge continues. Having said that, there was a significant increase in fees comparing year on year, with the actual fees collected in 10-11 of 81 million increasing to 139 million in 11-12. Investment income was better than budget and came in at 27 million. There was a small amount of other income, and then we had the funds allocated from Treasury of 150 million as part of revenue. Total revenue, therefore, came in for the year of 430 million against overhead, of 321 million against overhead expenditure of 430 million, resulting in an operating deficit of 109 compared with the 244 million deficit for the previous year. Management fees are reflected as a percentage of program expenditure, and there's actually a small decrease in 11-12 compared with the prior year of 3.6%. Chair, the table at the bottom of the page is probably the most critical table in this presentation. And that looks at the investment fund. And this really reflects the cash resources available to the IDT to fund its operating costs for the period. The opening balance at the beginning of April 2011 was 415 million. To that we allocated the treasury allocation of 150. Withdrawals for the year to fund operational costs came in at 314 million. We closed with an investment fund balance of 278. Now, looking forward, we've predicted what the forecast will be at 2013. And based on the overall withdrawals of 260 million, taking into account our cost component strategy, we're looking at a closing balance at March at this point of 33 million rand. That effectively would give us 1 month funding available for the 13-14 financial year. The following page reflects an analysis of expenditure. Total employee costs have increased by 0.34% from the 2010-2011 to 2011-2012 year, and very close to budgeted figures. Administration expenses have showed a 44% increase from the previous year, and we'll talk to that, but show a decrease from the budget, where costs have not only been contained, but certain of the initiatives, etc., have been cut out entirely as a result of the funding needs of the IDT. Depreciation amortization is very much in line with the previous year and budget. Program expenditure, which we processed in 2010-11 have not been repeated, and fruitless and wasteful expenditure, Chairperson, you will note at the bottom, a decrease from 900,000 in the previous year to 53,000 in this year, which relates primarily to interest on Telkom and a few other service provider accounts. Chairperson, the one area where there has been a significant trimming and controlling of costs is in respect of the development initiatives, where there was a budget for the year of 120 million, the actual spend was 10 million. If one looks at the analysis of specific expenditure, consulting fees, and here this is not in the presentation itself, but it's to give some background, consultancy fees had increased by some 44%, largely as a result of the transformation process. Travel and accommodation had increased over the 2 years by 50%, largely as a result of the increase in portfolio, which, Jeff, as you will recall, has gone from 2.1 to 4.2 billion, and also there was an element of transformation costs in there. And then workshops, conferences, workshops and conferences had increased by a significant amount, 140%, from 6 to 14 million, largely as a result of the transformation process. Shares devoted. The next slide to the auditor's report for the year, highlighting specific issues that were highlighted within the report. The IBT has received its 10th consecutive unqualified audit report on the financial areas within the IBT. There were specific references to legal and regulatory requirements, one being on the predetermined objectives and the measurement of actual against those predetermined objectives, compliance with laws and regulations with regard to the annual financial statements. The Auditor General identified misstatements which were subsequently corrected. Procurement and contract management as a result of issues in respect of PFMA. And then internal control on specifically performance management where the Auditor General identified inadequate monitoring by supervisors resulting in certain material misstatements. It did not, in fact, however, change the Auditor General's qualification as far as the report was concerned. With regard to the AG's findings, management has prepared an implementation plan which has been discussed and approved not only by the AG but by internal audit to address the matters raised by the AG. The plan has been presented to the Audit Committee, and progress against the plan will be noted over the second half of the financial year. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. Are you done? Can we now engage?
Just to highlight the risks and the mitigation, therefore, Chair, to also indicate that these risks have been put forward to the board and has been approved by the board. So the board will be monitoring the high-risk areas that we have put forward. And those, Chair, will focus on regulatory risks, as my colleague has already indicated, the issues of funded mandate and unfunded mandate, and as well as some of the elements that will come out of the transformation process, Chapter 7. If there are any changes, we are saying these are some of the things that we need to monitor very closely. We are aware, Chair, that there are a number of outstanding elements from the transformation, the legislative issues, the scheduling of the IDT, and all those elements. So that is high on the list of the risk. The growing misalignment between the development and poverty profile of the country. Chairperson, this is as a result of the fact that the IDT does not have adequate resources to pursue its corporate strategy, and therefore we don't want to commit that we'll be able to bridge those gaps. So we're putting it forward once more as a risk. So if you evaluate as in terms of outcome, you would find that we've not been able to meet the necessary impact that was required on that. The political risk, Chairperson, is really the confirmation of the IDT's mandate. Chair, whilst the mandate of 1997 of the IDT still is the existing mandate that we are using, we just feel that, Chairperson, it is important to reconfirm that mandate and the alignment with government, which is a process that honourable members are aware of and is in your radar as well. Business risks, primarily around the internal environment of the IDT, and this relates to the effective and uncertainty of staff turnover and commitments to clients. And I think as my colleague has projected, what are the cash flow projections that we will be closing with at the end of the financial year that go to that risk. The communication risk surrounding the management of perception, I think honorable members are aware of an article that came out at some stage that was saying IDT is retrenching, IDT is closing down, and those are some of the communication elements that we think we need to be able to manage. The financial risk, my colleague has outlined that. Recommendations. We recommend that the committee notes the annual report, including the areas of over and under achievement and the reason for the variances as presented in the annual report, and that the committee notes the financial sustainability challenges of the IDT and continues to support efforts to confirm and legislate the IDT's mandate. And also, Chairperson, to add, to say that as we talk about our apology, so that we will then present a revised and printed copy to yourself as soon as possible. We'll start with that process. Thanks.
Thanks, Tembi. Honourable members, that's the report. It's going to be difficult for us to analyze this report with these mistakes. There are a lot of mistakes. And can we engage with the report? Tole, we will be followed by Madlala, Dreyer, Madlova, Swadid, September, November, I'm sorry, my apologies, and Nwani, Baba Gayla.
Chairman, thank you very much for the presentation.
Before, in the that problem belongs to human settlement. You must not bring it here. Please do me that favor. Can you please? I know.
Thank you, Chair. My concern, Chair, is that it was very difficult to read this documentation because of this error. So now they fix it. It was very late because. So there's nothing that we can do. But Chair, this is my concern, Chair. The calling of the President that all the vacancies should be filled. But it shows that the IDT doesn't adhere to the calling of the President. Because if you can check the vacancies that they have in the IDT, it's shocking. So what I want to find out the time frame. Do they have the time frame to fill these vacancies? And the other one is that one on portfolio spend per token. I don't know, there's no page here, Chairperson. This report, Chairperson, doesn't.
The page is not. Oh.
I don't know what the page. There's no page on this.
Okay, presentation. Okay.
There's no number. If you can check, Chairperson, on how came. It shows that health and care facilities, there's nothing. Sport, arts and culture, nothing. Water and sanitation, nothing. Welfare support, nothing. Eastern Cape, it is coming and going to Northern Cape. There's a lot of nothing. And the Western Cape is west, not a lot of nothing. So now, what I want to get at, what is happening here, if they can give us some more details on nothing, their problem. And the other one, Chair, is that on Chair, the budget, the overspend on budget. They say it's overachieved, but according to my understanding, it's overspend because it doesn't indicate if they have the budget for this overachieved. If you can check here, Chairperson, talk about 146 on outcome major output community-driven development project in building empower and cohesive communities. 146 overachieved. Did they have a budget for that one, Chair? And the last one, Chair, is that one, I don't know what's happening on the one that is, they achieved 582% community job creation.
This factor is 82%, 177%, 164%. It can qualify the branch. Sometimes there are on that they show here, they talk about percentage, but there's no figures. There's no figures, just as the non-management fees, the percentage of profit and expense. What is actually figures, not the percentage, because they talk about 3.6%, 6.5%, 3.3%. What is the figure? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, mine is on the slide of the... Firstly, I would like to thank the presentation from ITT. But my concern is about schools built. I see here in the Eastern Cape, ITT is still struggling to build schools, yet it's the province which is faced with lots of math schools or kids are still learning under trees. And according to the Minister of Basic Education, he says that by 2014, I know that the previous year there was a problem of intervention between basic education and ITT that they are building regarding building schools. Now I want to know exactly, is there any progress made, because the amount spent is far less in the Eastern Cape. And when you see KZN, it's much higher. Also, KZN is the rural province. But again, coming to Northern Cape, I regard Northern Cape as also a rural province. No schools were built there. Maybe if you can get a more clarity, why is it a picture like that? Also, I see here that on the building empowerment and cohesive communities, participatory development, number of government structures established. We established 123%, which is over. But now, if it can be clarified, which are those government structures, because the target was 13 and you achieved 16, maybe if you can also get a list, even if it's not today, but you need to know exactly which are those government structures. Also, building sustainable community through integrated social infrastructure. You achieved 4.9 billion, which is 164%. I want to know how many percentage of this which was directed to school building. Thank you, Chairperson.
Madam Chair, I'm referring to page 92 in the annual report of the IDT, and it's just under other reports by the Auditor General, it says there's an investigation conducted by an independent consulting firm regarding allegations of possible fraud around the supply chain management process. I'd just like further information on that. What was the basis for this request and how far this report is done, when it will be completed, and so on and so forth. Thank you.
Hi, Bragata.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. I'm not sure, Chair, whether you'll give us another bite, because I've got a lot of questions. As per the statement, it's so big for the whole year.
Yeah, you go.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. I want to say to thank the presenter.
It's not a long record, but a long record.
Yes. The presenters, as well as also to congratulate the new chairperson of the board and the board members. Chair, I want to check. There is inconsistency in this report. I don't know, because they have admitted that there are also errors. If you look at page 10, Honorable Chair, this is the page 51. There is an amount on page 10 for 4.2 billion. And then when you go to page 21, it's 4.2 million. I don't know which one is a correct figure. and also they talk about 2.2 million that have been spent on the education. I don't know whether it's 2.2 million or it's a billion, but what is written here is a billion. Maybe if we can clarify and then understand. Also on page 21, Honorable Chair, on the attendance of meetings and the board, but I don't know, from Drake, I don't know whether he was really assisting the board on the contributing as he was appointed, because he was absent for the whole year. And also Mr. Patel, if you look at the audit committee and finance all the time, he attended once. Are we getting value for money or the services that are really required or to those members that have been appointed? Preacher, on the issue of consultant cost, I can see that the big stake is taken by the consultant even in that 150 million that was given to the IDT. But Honorable Chair, the President has made a call to reduce the issue of consultancy as well as the tendering system, in particular to non-technical work. Is there any plan for IDT to implement this call in order to increase the job creation? As I indicated, I can see a big stake of consultants that is given. Can they tell us what is the percentage that is spent in consultants in the own budget? Number four, Chair, on page 26. Also, I think my colleague has covered more on the over expenditure or over achievement. Why do we say it has contributed to the increase of the target? Was it not part of a plan? If not, why? I can find an example around the issue of the development week listening that they said it was contributed. But in that plan, I know that it will be that particular week. Also, if you look down on the page 26, there is an indication that they spent 144 million in supporting the NPO and NGOs against the set target of 38, and then we go down with the same. We want to check where did they get the extra money, because if you are budgeting, you are budgeting for a certain amount, but if it is more, where do you get this money? Can they clarify to us? Because in the public sector, the over expenditure and under expenditure is a criminal act, both of them. Going to page 33, EPWP, we appreciate the achievement that has been done in the EPWP job creation, but I want to check, there is a contradiction of some sort, because on the challenges that they have indicated in the report, they said AMC, which is alternative method of contraction, it has reported as a challenge to say that they are not going to achieve the actual job because of the short time that it takes to build an infrastructure. But now they have exceeded. But although I heard the CEO saying that they are going to do a breakdown to indicate to us what are the efforts that have been achieved by IDT. And then on page 83, Chair, but the finances will come later, maybe I'm taking a lot of your time.
Yeah.
Can I do this one on the phone checking and then deal with the finances later, Chair?
Yeah.
On page 33, Chair, on the human settlement, there is an indication that the target was not met because of the late of signing the service level agreement and all those challenges that are indicated. And the municipalities that are affected are Umhlathuze, Umzumbe, and the other municipalities. My question, Chair, is to check, is there any plan to rectify this in 2012-2013 financial year? I'm saying that because it took to service delivery. If there was a target of sanitation that was supposed to be done in the communities, and here it was not achieved because of these different things, is there any plan to really deal with it? I will request Chair to deal with finances.
Thank you. Is it November 30? November?
Thank you. Thank you also for the report, and we welcome also Ombele Gilimhleka Sakatigut. In just 2.75 chairperson, just that it should be clarified to us. It is reported that the total budget spent was, the budget for the program was that 834 and what, which are including the operational, operational and capital. But the program spent 782 against their target. But now what happened to the other money? It was, also on page 91%, the CEO, the CFO has explained everything on the audit report on page 91. My question would have been why and what, but they have explained. But what I want to know is that we as the committee have the privilege of also having the plan, as they are talking about. There is a plan that I said against that. Page 92 has been asked by the honorable member. I thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and I will take this opportunity to congratulate and welcome Dr. Figeni after being appointed as a chairperson. And I also would like to take this opportunity to thank the CEO for having given us a presentation. My first question is with regard to the slide on building sustainable communities through integrated social infrastructure. I just want to find out, because at the beginning it was actually said that the IDT is actually wanting to contribute to job creation. But when I see on this slide, I find out that they had the target of a number of job opportunities to be created. A number of job opportunities, which is at 35,732. But when I look into the achievement, and I found out that actually they've got about 25,528, which is 71%. So I just want to find out what actually happened here. Why is this actually, they are actually below the target? What happened in this regard? And another question is on organogram. It is reflecting here on the organogram that there are vacancies, especially of company secretary, but I want to focus much on this one of senior internal audit. I just want to find out how long has this actually job vacant. How long has this been vacant? Because it actually affects the running of the organization. My other one is with regard to the revenue expenditure. Here it shows that in 2010-2011 it was 3.6% on management fees and percentage of program expenditure, and then it was 6.5%, and now actually for 2011-2012 3.3%. So I actually want also to get a thorough explanation in that regard. And on annual report, I just want to find out as whether are we getting value for money in terms of the leadership, because on page 91 on the leadership, it is saying that the leadership did not exercise adequate oversight responsibility regarding financial reporting, compliance with laws and regulations, and reporting on performance against predetermined objectives. So I just want, that's why I want to find out if we are actually getting value for money. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Honorable,
thank you, Chairperson. I want to go over the same questions around the billions and the millions that have been, the questions that have been asked by my colleagues. And thanks a lot for the presentation. My first question is around the procurement and contract management on page 91.
but it says goods, work or service were not procured through a procurement process which is fair, equitable, transparent and competitive as required by the PFMA. I'd like to have an explanation as to what happened. And then about the internal controls, it's an achievement because they are relevant, compliant and compliant with their law and regulations. Again, on leadership, it's a challenge. The leadership did not exercise adequate oversight responsibility regarding financial reporting compliance with law and regulation. And then again about the investigation, it's already been asked. And lastly, it's about the amount of money that has been spent in the same case on building the schools. My question is around just roughly how many schools have they built? Because the last time we were there, we learned that about one classroom cost about a million rand. So if this amount has been spent on schools, and lastly as to at what percentage are we as far as eradication of mud schools in the Eastern Cape is concerned. Thanks, Chair.
Mike, can you, for recording purposes, can you switch on your mic? Okay. Well.
Thank you, Chairperson. And thanks for the presentation. most of my questions have been asked by other members, but I've got one question around schools. Yeah, I see the amount here that in KZN they spend so much for the schools and in the Eastern Cape, but I'm still worried because in KZN the schools are not good for the children in the province. The province are two provinces, that is Eastern Cape and KZN. Those provinces are densely populated, and they need schools to come close to the people. They travel a lot. Our children travel a long distance to schools. They need transport, and the government, I think, is unable to provide transport for our school children. So now, we need more schools to be built, more special high schools. High schools are not enough for our schools for several areas in KZN as well as in the Eastern Cape. As you can see in the Eastern Cape, there are a lot of mud schools. So yes, IDT is dealing with the mud schools, but we need more funds to deal with these mud schools as well as building other new schools. I think that the education as well, the IDT and public work, they should, make a joint venture that will give a lot of funds so that the schools could be built.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me sing the same song, Persiba, and welcome you. You know where he is coming from, Fatherland. They use a lot of, when we want Mark, we go to his area to sort ourselves out. And I think before he got to this committee, he sorted himself probably because I said I'm going to spend about 5 minutes. I didn't even bring my documents, Chairperson, because this time I wanted to send you back. Let me be very open with you. Because I was not able about their report. But I see your Chairperson has done a very good job in getting himself sorted out. But however, Chairperson, I'm not sure what page it is, but on the special schools and clinics, I think, health. Knowing very well that you deal with line departments, you're getting money from line departments. Now, just a few clarities here. When we deal with Eastern Cape, I'm not going to blame you.
Chairperson will remember very well. There are some schools that were built by GPSA, and we were strong against that here. But unfortunately, the Department of Public Works then still need to claim its mandate. May I then, in few words, say to you today that those schools, most of them are not complete, but those that were built by the so-called black contractors who were trained by IDT, they are complete. So I think IDT needs to clap their hands for it. But the contractors that come from Joburg haven't completed those schools. That is what we are saying in this committee, that you cannot take GBSA and say they must build schools. They are for finances. But what I'm just saying is that the money that you've received, is it because some of the money went to GBSA? Because one is not happy about the 446 million against 1 billion in the other provinces. And we know that, as Dagmar Kuban is saying, we've got a lot of my schools, and the chairperson can agree with me on that one. Is that because of that? And there's a whole lot of consistency in the allocations. Even with there, you find that other provinces benefit more than other provinces, and as far as poverty is concerned and infrastructure is concerned, there's a lot of infrastructure that does not exist, especially in the former homeland, in the former TPV state. So one needs clarity on this, what is happening, why is, does it seem there is a province that's a super province to the other province. Let me be open. I know that you get this money from Light, but why is there super province? What's wrong? There's something wrong somewhere, Chairperson. And we need to find out what is wrong. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Gaynor. Let me make a follow-up on what you said. In Limpopo, I'm informed that IDT is underutilized. Seriously underutilized in Limpopo. I even went to their office just to go and sit down with them and hear what they're saying. And I'm told Treasury in Limpopo has done some research, and they also confirm that IDT in Limpopo is underutilized. Can the ministry note that? Second, on page 42, table 20 and the explanation under table 20, don't tally. Can we take note of that? On the table, Free State is 54.9, Limpopo 343.3, Gauteng is 157.5. Meanwhile, the table will be below. Don't tally. My understanding is that Free State should be 22.4 million. Limpopo should be 66.8 million. Gauteng should be 23.7 million. Do you agree with me, CFO? Thank you very much. On page 75, where you talk about rain water harvesting, what happened to the two tanks? Because we only managed to deliver 998 tanks. And how much was each tank? Why, where are the other two tanks this can be? what, Baba Mark? I think we need to allow them to give us answers by taking note that, oh, okay, finances. Manoba?
No, thanks, Honorable Chair. Especially, Chair, on page 32, the Eastern Cape and KwaZulu-Natal leading in spending. Is there a project on the ground? Because the report is saying that they are assuming a relationship between spend and anticipated impact. So assuming does not mean that it's taking place on the ground. And you know that we have got an experience in particular in Eastern Cape when we're doing our oversight, when they show us the mountain and say where there is smoke, there is a project, refusing to go and show us the project. But the spending is equal to the service delivered on the ground. Maybe if they can assure us this, because they've got that experience there, we came back without seeing the project and the money was spent. And then on, that is a concern, Chair. On the senior manager, internal auditor, we are told that he or she resigned in September. The work is outsourced. For how long are they going to outsource this work? Because the government, we are saying they must build the capacity within the institution so that we can deliver to our communities. And Honorable Chair, the CEO, when she was doing a presentation, they said they have budgeted for clean audit, and then they are saying 100% clean audit. I don't think it's a clean audit, Honorable Chair. It's unqualified audit report, not a clean audit. Because the clean audit is the audit that meets the required level of assurance, meets all the angles. And when you look at it here, Chair, for the 3 consecutive years, the Auditor General has indicated that they provide some level of required level of assurance. And when you look at the drivers of internal control, there is still a challenge around the issue of leadership. There is still a challenge around the issue of financial. The colleagues have talked to page 91. If you look at page 91, you go to section 12, if you go down, you can see that there is still a challenge. What is it that the institution is planning to do to rectify this thing? Because it has been there for 3 consecutive years. I can talk to the report of the Auditor General. Maybe if nothing has been done, maybe they must come up with a plan. I know that, Chair, we used to fight with IT, but our contribution, they took it serious. And then they rectify. That's why they are where they are today. We trust that when you talk to them, they listen and do something that is positive. But I don't think it's a clean audit. There is no 100% clean audit that they targeted.
Thank you, Stevenson, and this is CEO, CFO. Time on a
side. I think I just want to quickly confirm that indeed it's a non-qualified audit. And our effort and aspiration is to have a clean audit and also targeting those areas of the matters of emphasis. We will, as I indicated at the beginning, work together with the department, with the portfolio committee, taking very seriously and factoring in some of the suggestions that have come here, which I think are quite valuable. And just broadly on the issue of vacancy, I think members are correct in saying that government is saying we should fill all vacancies. But take the unique situation of IDT, which was facing existential crisis where virtually it would have no money by March next year. Therefore, it was facing the possibility of closure. But I'm happy to report that all the efforts of meeting with the Treasury and working with the department have yielded results. The minister has supported our efforts, and as such, we have received some signals that we may actually be given the bridging finance. But our aim, as we indicated in our strategy as the new board, is not just to have a survivalist strategy, but is to play in the same space as your DBSAs and the IDCs, which are receiving billions in order to implement programs. If you look at the diagnostic report and the national plan, key is the issue of implementation and the state capacity. And we do think that IDT, given its track record, given resources, capacitated, will do more.
Unless if you do the leadership, does it oversight role over finance? Because the AG says you did not do your oversight over finance. That's what the AG says.
Thank you, Chair. I do think that as soon as we came in, because we came after the period which was being, covered here, we have prioritized the issue of oversight and governance. And we've also indicated that the filling of those critical positions, especially the audit expertise, is key to this exercise. I'm hoping that by the time we meet and account to this committee, those will be the themes of the past. I'll give over to the CEO and the CFO and Professor Fries.
Just
tell me. Thank you, Chair. Maybe, Chair, to start with the 100% on audits, I guess, Chair, we can try and improve how we put the percentage. If you recall, last
in the past 2-3 years, we had matters of emphasis. This committee almost gave us a target to say they want the matters of emphasis cleared. And for us, that was then the 100% that we were measuring. We might have made a mistake with that. The issues that have remained, Chair, are housekeeping matters, as reported by the AG. But I do accept, Chair, that if the committee wants us, instead of putting that as 100, maybe put it as 90-something, we can definitely adjust on that in the next coming target. But it was really based on the discussions that we had had, where you had given a target to clear all the matters of emphasis, and that is what we had done. Chair, the issue of leadership, you would recall, Chair, that the explanation on that was very mainly, Chair, there was a number of absenteeism from board level. I think the committee specifically were querying Tassie Tom as a deputy chair at that stage, and therefore that was referring to that. But I think we have passed that particular hurdle, Chairperson. On the oversight on management, Chair, I think what the AG was referring to has been the performance information, Chair, which we did not do very well on. Chair, we are at 44% accuracy. As you know, that the performance auditing is 3 years now that it has been running, and there is still the AG cannot give an opinion on that, because they are giving all departments, all institutions to cope with it. Chair, last year we were at 66%. So one of the things that the committee says that we have deteriorated, and I accept that we have deteriorated on performance information. Chairperson, this year the Auditor General did not sample the auditing of performance information. They audited everything. Last year it was sampled. But Chairperson, we have put in all mechanisms to make sure that our performance auditing has the right information to support that, including the person appointing performance information officers in all the provinces. The reality of the situation, Chair, is that our technical people, as they go to the field, they don't take care of the supporting documents, which is what the AG then audits on, which has put us into this situation. But we've put in the measures, Chairperson, to make sure that it doesn't happen again. Chair, the Eastern Cape, in terms of the spend and impact, I think there again is the way we've put the paragraph. What we're trying to say, Chair, was that if you look into the expenditure, the impact measurement, what is the difference that those schools have made to that community? At the moment, we can only assume, because we've not really measured that impact, whether it has reduced the failure rate or it has improved the lives of people. We've not yet put in that. We can only assume at the moment. And those are some of the targets that we want to build in as part of our research to make sure that the impact can also be measured. We can also re-look into how we phrase that, because really we're looking at the output and outcome, and I think we can only assume on the outcome at the moment. The two tanks, Chairperson, I'm sure my colleagues are checking those figures just to get exactly what happened. But I remember, Chair, that at some stage we inherited that project from the line function department, and the cost of the project escalated because of the delay in the actual implementation. So in as far as the number of tanks that were targeted and the tanks that were delivered, I remember there was a shortfall. But I would just like, Chairperson, either to come back to you with accurate information if my colleagues do not have it here. But I'm sure we'll be, I recall that particular incident, Chair. The page 42, Chair, we have agreed on that in terms of that table not tallying. Chairperson, you are very right with the underutilization of Limpopo. Actually, what the Treasury, honorable members are aware that Limpopo is under administration. What the administrator has done, one with the social development funding, they've actually tallied all that social development funding, and they're engaging with us to take over that because there has been a very high under expenditure in Limpopo and a very high fee. Actually, we discovered in Limpopo, my FGM was briefing me, but those companies that were implementing were charging 42%. We're still looking at 3.5%, but there was 42%. Hence, the administrator, I say, IDT would rather take over the implementation of those programs. Equally with the schools, Sir President, our portfolio in Limpopo has not been stable and not big enough. And that takes me to the question that has come through almost all members to say, is this an over expenditure? How come other provinces, they have got very little allocation? To indicate to members that we, unfortunately, because of our responsive or reactive way of implementing, as 1997 said that the IDT will respond to government's requirements. It is the departments that appoint us and give us that allocation according to what has been allocated to them by DORA and what they think as IDT we can be able to implement. So unfortunately we do not determine how much of their budget we can be able to implement. And as such you find that in Northern Cape, if I can just take the example of Northern Cape, we've just broken through Northern Cape. In the next financial year you'll see we've got 200 million portfolio now that we're implementing in terms of schools. But it is the first time, and again it was this committee that said you need to go to the Northern Cape. Head Chairperson, one of your comments was the photo of the RTM. We then split the RTM to also take care of Northern Cape. But we felt that if we don't build capacity, they would not be able to fulfill the requirements that this committee had put forward. So we have now been able to get about 200 million, and they will see us reporting on that, because it's someone that is taking care of it at that level. The issue here of YKZN, a super province on the school rollout, just once more, it's the allocation that the province itself gives to, it goes to the underutilization point that you raised earlier, Chair, when province itself feels that IDT can be able to assist and give us more allocation. Let me hasten to say, Chair, in KZN there were also a lot of disasters. And I think a huge portion of that school's rollout was on the disasters. And when the roof of schools flew off, the water issues, there were a lot of environmental type of issues that we intervened in. If I'm not mistaken, it went to about half a billion, just in terms of the disasters that happened in that area. And it shot up, therefore, the portfolio there. Now, that is not something that you can plan for, because it happens then and needs to be done at that time when it happens. Hence, it is not necessarily an over-expenditure, but it is the ability to respond to that crisis whenever it happened and we were allocated that.
Honourable members, IDT has exhausted its time. Can we agree that IDT, the remaining questions, put them on paper by Friday, that we get all those responses? Because we are pressed on time. Can we agree on that, Honourable? Time, please. Today we were told to be right on time. We are not undermining you, but I said we also need to give CBE time. Just tell me. On that note, thank you very much for coming. Sheraton, you were well baptized, please. And we hope that the responses on paper will be the correct one, because in this committee, we are talking about integrity. We are talking about honesty, that the responses and whatever you're going to give us will be the correct ones and not the misleading ones. Otherwise, thank you very much, and travel safe. Thank you very much. CBE, it's your time. While they are still preparing themselves, can we just go for 5 minutes break? Well, thank you very much. All members, on behalf of the committee, I would like to welcome CBE. And you can start your presentation on, we'll check on, look on the papers if the system is not working. And also to say to Lucas Weber, who ran away from Parliament, doing research from Parliament and ran away to CBE. Aye, Baba, that was not good. The gentleman in a pink hat. He was in the department, in the research department, so he ran away to CBE. I'm sure you're comfortable there, you're getting there, but I'm 100% sure that you're missing Parliament. Mama, I received an apology from your chairperson. that she won't be able to come. She's expecting a baby. I'm not sure whether it's a boy or a girl. But otherwise, we wish her well. Everything of the best. Over to you, Mama. Well, Mama, answer my apology.
Thanks, Honorable Chairperson. We want to formally extend the apology on behalf of the Chairperson of Council for the reasons communicated to the Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee. My name is Lucky Lovella. I'm a Council member and an Executive Committee member of CPE, and I've been delegated to lead this delegation on behalf of Council. With me, I have with the CEO of CPE. He's a new CEO who started in May, Mamukuku Masibuku. We also have the CFO of CPE, Makefo, and the guy who is today wearing two caps, Lucas, the CEO of CPE. Chairperson, the CEO and the CFO will talk to the report that's submitted to the Portfolio Committee, the achievements and the challenges we have, and also the auditor's report and the issues faced by the auditor, and how we're going to remedy the situation. But I think it will be correct for me to highlight one or two issues before I hand over to the CEO. That for some time, CPE has been limited by the legislative mandate in terms of the act that establishes CPE. And we are cleared that the Department of Public Works has started the process of reworking the legislation, so that the limitations that are there in the Act are corrected, and we able as CPE to operate and carry on our mandate as expected. As we all know, that if you go to Section 3 of the Act, out of the 9 objects of establishing CPE, there's only one that really gives CPE the powers to execute its work, and that is Section 3I. The rest of the object is just to ensure, promote, and all those things, and that limits and compromise the mandate given to CPE by the country to transform the built environment as we seek to attain the objects of a developmental state. But we're also excited to record to this collective that we have also attained an unqualified audit opinion. And the CFO will talk much on those things. Without wasting my time, I will head over to the CEO to take us through to the presentation. And the rest of us will come in as we respond to issues for clarifications and questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members. We would go to slide 4, which gives an overview of our presentation structure. We start with the background, and then section 2 talks to the performance report of CBE. Then we go to the governance review. And on the financial and audit report, the CFO, three opinion chair, would handle that section. Then we look at the activities of the 6 Built Environment Professional Councils, and then we would look then into the future on the interventions and the transformation initiatives that we are busy with, and then the chairperson will conclude. Just to take the meeting through the policy context and the background for the annual report, it is based on the threat plan, and that threat plan pulls its activities and its focus from the government's medium-term strategic framework, from the State of the Nation address, from the minister's key priorities, from the national budget estimates, of 2011, from the key policies at a national level and federal policies, and in response to the development priorities of government, such as skills development and job creation, and also from the mandate as outlined in the CBE Act, and also from the strategic plan that was given to the Minister of Public Works. The CBE identified 8 key strategic goals, those of transformation, integrated development, stakeholder relations, being a thought leader in the built environment, repositioning the CBE in the market, public protection, responding to national priorities, and strengthening the efficiency and administration of the CBE. And then these 8 strategic goals were then consolidated and translated into 4 programs that the annual report is reporting back on. The 4 programs are administration, the Built Environment Academy that deals with skills, the Center of Innovation and Integrated Planning that deals with research, and that deals with CBE being a thought leader in the built environment information space and knowledge space. The 4th program deals with the public interest mandate, which looks at protecting the interests of the public within the built environment. When we go to our performance report, just as an overview, our current council is the 3rd one, or our current board is the 3rd one since the establishment of CBE in 2002. And we are saying that CBE has complied to all the legal requirements. And also, CBE has made sure that it is aligned to government policies and ensuring that the development agenda of the country is taken forward within the built environment. With regards to the performance highlights, our member of council, talking on behalf of the chairperson, has highlighted some of the achievements that we've had in the year. We have, in terms of corporate governance, we've developed and implemented a corporate governance framework, a risk management strategy plan, and we've made good progress, especially in establishing relations with African countries in the built environment and construction industry space. In terms of the audit opinion, we received an unqualified audit opinion, and we've also made good progress in terms of the identification of work. Now, identification of work is a mechanism that is used to identify work that can only be carried out by registered persons. So it's a license to operate for professionals, and it seeks to make sure that only people that are registered and are qualified and competent in the various built environment professions are able to practice within that space. Coming down to specific programs, starting with program 1, which is administration, the targets that were achieved I've mentioned the risk management plan and identifying the risk champions. I've mentioned corporate governance framework being developed and approved. We've also developed a new performance management development system, which is currently being implemented. And we've also reduced the methods of emphasis in our audit report in the year under discussion. We've also
produced an organizational efficiency report, but the other guests that were not achieved on program one, and one of the key ones was the implementation of the organizational dashboard, which we are busy implementing in this current year, and we couldn't implement it in the last financial year. In terms of program two, which talks to skills, we have achieved the translation of various policies. We have certain functions that are outlined in the CBE Act, and out of those certain functions, 11 policies have been developed to govern those areas of operation. And out of the 11 policies developed, we have translated four of those key ones into four regulations. Those include the appeals, it includes continuous professional development CBT policy, it includes the registration of professionals, and it also includes the identification of work. We also run a bursary scheme, and students from previously disadvantaged backgrounds continue to benefit from the CBE bursary scheme. We've also been very actively involved in the accreditation of academic programs for the built environment, and we still remain with nine that are not accredited, but in our annual report we give a full list of which institutions are accredited and which particular programs are accredited. With our skills arena, the targets that were not achieved, for example, the translation of continuous professional development regulations. Also, in terms of policy development, we've been busy with the SGB policy. SGB is a standard generating body. We're busy with that policy framework, and it's been rolled over to the current financial year. It was supposed to have been concluded in the past year. With regards to program three, we've talked to our research and information and the CBE being the thought leader in the built environment sector. We have augmented our research capacity, and we also have developed a stakeholder management and communication protocol. We also have held stakeholder workshops with regard to three policies. The first one being the recognition of new professions, the continuous professional development policy, and the standard generating bodies policy. But we did not achieve under program three, two key deliverables. The first one was the advisory reports that were not completed. Those advisory reports included the unemployed graduate research that we're doing, and the reason for non-achievement there is that the tertiary institutions did not give us adequate feedback for us to research this area. We're still trying various mechanisms to get this information. We also did not complete the information on the state of the built environment. Report was updated. We are addressing those two issues here. In terms of BE Indaba, we requested that it be done on a biannual basis rather than on a yearly basis. And the last program is a public interest program, which promotes the interest of the public within the built environment. We have finalized four areas in terms of identification of work regulations. We have a challenge with the appeals in that we're not able to process appeals within the stipulated 60 days.
And one of the key reasons for that is that the information that comes from the six built environment professional councils, they come to us in sort of in the format that we cannot actually process or move forward with the appeals. So what we've done is to come up with a business case to benchmark and to develop perspectives for all six professional councils with regard to how they should handle appeals at their level, so that by the time that appeals come to CBE, they are in a state that they can be taken forward. So we had problems in terms of achieving that particular deliverable. And in terms of governance, the council report is the accounting authority, and it reports to the Minister of Public Works, and we've said that we've complied with the relevant legislation, the PFMA, and the King report that governs how boards operate. In terms of the various committees, we've got those committees outlined in red: the Executive Committee, the Human Resources, the Audit, the Finance Committee, the Appeals Committee, the Identification of Work Committee, and there's an ad hoc committee on professional fees, and we also have the Transformation Committee and the Education and Research Committee. When it comes to the record of attendance of meetings, it is outlined on page 21, Chair. You would see that there are instances where certain members have only attended one council meeting, etc. And I would say that for Mr. L.W. Mulobela, he only attended one meeting because in the absence of the CEO, he became the interim CEO, so he was no longer a council member. In case of C. Reiters, he resigned. He was a representative from Water Affairs, and he resigned. And you'll see that in terms of the claims, there are council members or board members that have got zeros for their claims. Those are members that don't put in any claims for participating in the CBE Council. Some of them are from government, some of them are from the private sector, but they don't claim any money. In terms of the financial and audit information, the CFO will take us through both slides, and I'll give over to her to take us through in detail with those. Thank you.
Thank you, Ma. CFO.
Thank you, Chairperson. Honourable members, I think it has been highly highlighted that we've received an unqualified audit report. However, Chair, we need to say that I think we also highlighted that we complied with laws and regulations. Chair, there were some issues where we failed to comply, and those would be highlighted to the committee. Moving forward, Chair, what is that? That we have highlighted those areas of non-compliance, and Chair, we thought it would be prudent to update the committee on what the status is to date on those issues that were highlighted by the AG. Chair, we do note that in terms of performance information, there was non-compliance, particularly in the submission of our strategic plan, which needed to be submitted by September. But you will check, you would note, Chair, that in our annual report, we do state that there was a review of the strategic plan, which then led to us being unable to submit. We are happy to announce that today, Chair, the strategic plan was submitted timely, therefore we have complied with that area. The annual financial statement, Chair, this is one area that we found ourselves wanting, and we want to note and highlight that to the committee, that there were areas in which our financial statements that submitted to the Auditor General had a few misstatements which needed to be corrected, and Chair, we have put in controls and process to ensure that that does not happen. One of those being that we will then be preparing financial statements twice in a chair, so to enable the internal audit to review, but that we have everything in check for submission in the next coming financial year. Procurement chair, which is an area highly contested in all areas. Chair, we need to note here, Chair, that there was regulation that was issued by National Treasury, which unfortunately, Chair, we only became aware of late in the year, and we have since highlighted that to the National Treasury. You will note that, Chair, the issue was that there were bidders who are supposed to declare their status of employment, particularly those that are employed by the state, and those were not done. We did not receive those declarations. And also there was a declaration of which joint parties are supposed to declare to the CBE to ensure that there is no fraudulent abuse of the SCM system, and ensuring that those were not done for half the year, but going forward, Chair, those are implemented correctly. Then, Chair, there is an issue of fruitless and wasteful expenditure, which is also highlighted in our audit report. And, Chair, we have the matters being investigated, and upon the report being finalized and presented both to the Council as well as to the Ministry, I'm sure, Chair, copies will be made to the Committee for their review. In terms of the financial statements, Chair, we just took a brief visit. Chair, we do note that we did not provide an analysis of budget, but we an overview that we can provide that the overall variance in terms of our budget was 1%. And in terms of the program, Chair, there has been areas where the CEO has highlighted that we were unable to achieve, and the expenditure variance there is at a maximum of 11%. Chair, that report will be provided to the committee for further details so that they can be able to assess the information that I've just provided. Chair, if we just take a review of the movement in terms of our financial statements, Chair, you would note that there are no significant movements, and this is particularly due to the fact that our grant has not changed in any significant way. So, Chair, the highest area...
Sir, what are the reasons of you not disclosing all what you are saying here, but it's not here, not included here? What were the reasons?
Chair, thank you, Chair, for that. Peterson, the reason for that is that we just reviewed the presentation later and we thought of including the information. But we note that the last time there was an issue with our financials, so we did not want to have a repeat of that, where we changed the presentation after it's been submitted. So we are highlighting those areas and then we will then resubmit to the committee.
I must say something. Next year we will be dealing with a BRRR, BRRR. And if you give us incorrect information, how are we going to deal with that process? Because it's a process that should be tabled in Parliament, and we'll be tabling incomplete reports by the entity, of which I'll say, let it be the last time. Because when we table reports in Parliament, we table what we have given up, what we have summarized and whatever. You know, look at, and it's correct. Because we must table something that we have got evidence in. If the question are to say, why are you tabling to say it's in the report? But when it's not in the report, what do we say? Say yes, say. That can deny it, so we never said that. Because you know that.
Thank you, Chairperson Toma. Thank you, Chair. Chair, I think in terms of the finances, Chair, we have put explanations on the movements that are there from the previous year to the current year, and those are there, Chairperson, as highlighted in our report. And I thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just to say that the financial information in the annual report is complete and it's correct, but we take the point about the presentation, the absence of the information we will provide it, and apologies for that.
Administration is done on paper.
Yes.
I'm old-fashioned, but that's how it's done.
Yes.
I believe on if things are on paper, I can 10 years down the line and be able to track what you said.
We'll provide that slide, Chair. In terms of human resources moving forward, Chair, CDE had a staff complement of 32, 27 funded, and we have 55 versus 45% in terms of operations. Vis-a-vis admin staff, and the gender and race split is outlined on page 28. In terms of measures to move forward quickly and focus on the activities of the 6 Belt Environment Professional Councils, that include engineers, architects, quantity surveyors, landscape architects, property valuers, and project and construction managers. If we look at the mandate of CBE with respect to the 6 councils, we are responsible to play an oversight role, but as the chair outlined in the beginning, our act has got witnesses, so it actually impedes our ability to do certain things and to intervene on certain aspects in the way the 6 councils operate. But slide 31 talks about the key activities within the professional councils, the first one being the recognition of voluntary associations within the various councils. Just to say that there were no new VAs that were registered except the withdrawal of one voluntary association from the QSs. And in terms of code of conduct, which governs the ethics and the ethical behavior of professionals, there was a code of conduct policy framework that was developed by CBE in 2009. And it's been operationalized within the 6 councils. In terms of the disciplinary cases, we are seeing a decreasing trend in the number of cases. From 2008 to 2012, there's been a 33% decrease, but the issue that remains a worry is that the disciplinary cases that are more and more coming forward around incompetence of professionals, and that's a worrying issue. Slide 32 talks to the numbers and the trends. Per council, I'm not going to go through that, Chair. And if we move to slide 33, it talks about the public protection role that the different councils undertake. In conjunction with the CBE, with regards to appeals, our Act provides that any aggrieved party that is not satisfied with a decision from any of the 6 councils will have a right to go to CBE as the umbrella appeals body. And in terms of the appeals, I did indicate that we've had challenges in terms of the timeline, in terms of the information that we get from 6 councils, incomplete information, and we have consulted with the Health Professions Council to refine our appeal regulations
and also to come up with a benchmark and best practice model for all the six councils. In terms of identification of work, I did indicate that that is the activity that defines which professional can undertake what type of work according to their registration and their competency. We submitted the identification of work to the Competition Commission because the Competition Commission regards identifying work as reserving work. But we've got, we have a working relationship with the Competition Commission that we've established, and we are addressing the issues that are of concern to the Competition Commission. In terms of slide 34, the other key issue is the professional fees. Again, here the Competition Commission, as we all have read in the media, with the health professions, they are, you know, they also regard, you know, the publishing of professional fees as anti-competitive. And we are addressing that issue with the Commission also. With regards to the recognition of new professions, this is an initiative to make sure that additional, of the six professionals that we have, we get additional built environment professions that were left out of the stable of built environment professions when the Act were developed in 2000. And those professions include town planners and land surveyors who are natural operators within the built environment. In terms of human resource development, within the six councils, we have a very structured and a very extensive skills development initiative within the built environment, but I'm going to go into the detail of that a little bit later. I've talked about the key policy documents that we've developed. I've talked about also the accreditation program that we've done together and in close working relationship with the different councils who are subject matter experts in various academic programs. Then slide 36 talks to currently registered professionals within the six candles to see what percentage of those professionals comply with the continuous professional development requirement. Because if you are a registered engineer or architect or quantity surveyor, etc., every year you need to re-register. And every year you must prove that you've gone through courses to make sure that you keep abreast with your profession. So that slide gives the percentage per professional council on what percentage of professionals comply. Slide 37 gives the list of unaccredited programs, what they are, which institutions, and they are all outlined on the slide. And slide 38 gives the total number over the years, from the year 2007 up to 2011, the total number of registered professionals within the six professional councils. As in the year 2011, we're sitting with 56,000 roundabout registered professionals. But of course, we need to look at the details of the registration and what that what the figures tell us. In terms of the growth in new registrations,
Between 2008 to 2011, there's been a 22% growth of the professionals. In terms of the candidates who are new entrants into the profession, there's been a 6% growth, a 16% growth between 2009 and 2011. And in terms of the racial composition of now the candidates, we are looking at 62% black candidates and black as a collective, and 38% white. But these statistics hide the picture in terms of various professions such as architecture, property valuers, and landscape architects that have a below 50% mark in black candidates. When we now are talking about the registered professionals, we've seen a very slight improvement. If you look at the previous year versus, which is the next black, versus this year that we're reporting for. In the previous year, we had 66% white, now the white number has reduced to 64%, and the Africans in the previous year were 20, it is now 24. the other groups remain the same. excuse me, Chair. I've got bad sinusitis, so please excuse me. But the essence of that, of those numbers, is that the movement has been only 2%. So the challenge of transformation remains within the business environment. The next slide gives the breakdown in detail of candidates versus the professional. It gives the detail of the race profile of candidates. This is slide 41. And the following slides all give the pictorial depiction of what is contained in slide 39, those numbers, detailing those numbers. Slide 44 summarizes the areas that remain a challenge to CBE, and those areas are the transformation challenges, as the statistics say, of the profession. The poor throughput, both at the school level, at tertiary institutions, and most importantly, the translation of candidates to become fully fledged professional qualified.
You need to round up so
yes.
You can be able to engage.
Yes. That is the slide, slide 44 outlines the challenges that we have. It indicates the time frame for appeals, the identification of wealth. And slide 46 and 47, the final slide, talk about the initiatives that we've outlined in terms of addressing the challenges of transformation. Firstly, on the skill side, to focus on the structured candidacy program for the built environment, to focus on supporting math and science at schools, the public sector environment, built environment skills initiative that we deal with, and the last slide talks to the appeal, and thank you very much, and appointment of panel chairpersons to address the appeals, as well as the best practice model for the
six built environment professors, and also fast-tracking the identification of work, exercise, and engagement, especially with EXA. And page 46 and 47, Trey, the interventions that we have put in place to address the challenges that we've picked up in our area of operation. And thanks very much, Trey, for that. And Chairperson would like to conclude.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Before get your report, this is not a waste of money. Opening it does get torn apart. This is the newly, what can I say, the new report. You know, when you page it, just get. If you are doing the correct reading and analyze this thing, when you page, it's sort of, and it's a problem to us because you can't file it. Wait, mom, you'll have to give another copy before leaving.
Sorry about that, the other copies are intact.
You paint them, read them one page by page. They will fall apart.
Without wasting time, I think we'll respond to questions.
Thank you very much. Baba Gaila will be followed by Honorable Drea Majopa, November 1. Tole.
Chairperson, I'm just going to go over a few things. I've got the same problem you have with that report now. It's all in scattered. You said that you issued 54 bursaries. Now, of those 54 bursaries, how many are architects, quantitative engineers? And if you cannot answer these questions, just they must have us in the writing table, because I'm not sure if they'll be able to answer. Then, the previous year you also issued bursaries. Now, since this new parliament, 2009, how many have graduated? And of those that have graduated, have they opened their own companies? And after graduation, what do you do? Do they serve 1 year so that they can be experienced, or do you just leave them to go out there? Then, the Minister of Public Works is busy with a turnaround strategy. What is your assistance? Because the problem with the public works is technical skills. How do you put in this here to assist the Ministry to fast-track this turnaround strategy? Then, you are saying most of your disciplinary is because of incompetence. Now, how many, what disciplinary actions have been taken for that? And another one, I don't know if you'll be able to answer these questions now. Most of these professionals are registering their own company. Come back to school, chairperson, register the company. But worst of all, notice and align the chairperson. Worst of all, you find that they are registered as professionals, but they also register as contractors. In other words, they get in the government work, but they are also tendering and expecting to quantity survey. They use that experience. What do you do about that? Just a minute, then town planners, where do they fit in here? I don't see anything about town planners, and that is a skilled chairperson that's needed in all municipalities. All we've got a major problem then land surveyors, you know, we've been speaking about the land survey problems, where do they fit in? I think you must come back in the writing with that one as well. You won't be able to answer that now, definitely. I think, let me pause for now, I'll come back again.
Nagapa? Is it clear? Nagapa, clear?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes. I want to go to the presentation on page 21, where they give us the names of all the different committee members, the number of committee meetings that they attended, and then the claims for it. There seems to be some inconsistency. Some members are claiming up to 123,000 in total for different kinds of meetings, and others don't claim at all. And I was just wondering, you know, how do you explain that? If some members don't claim, why do others claim? Then I also noticed that Mr. Paul Sakati, the chairperson, said he attended 6 council meetings, but no one else attended 6. So if no one else also attended 6, were there actually 6 council meetings? How can you attend 6 if nobody else was there? The others attended 5 at the most, and 4. So was this person the only council meeting? And then on page 31 of the presentation about disciplinary cases, that's quite worrying. Although there's a declining trend, it's now fewer than the previous year, it is still very high, and as they quite rightly state so. But then further worrying is, apart from the high number, is that a significant number of these cases relate to professional incompetence. In other words, people have gone through the training, they've registered, they've done the work, but then they're found incompetent professionally. So somewhere something is wrong. How can you go through a whole training, qualify, and then be found incompetent for your job? Then lastly, not something on this specific, just a general comment I want to make. You know, we all be concerned with a lack of technical professional skills in the country as a whole, not just here, but particularly here as well, but it's everywhere. But I know it's not really for this committee, but I have to say it, but professional qualifications and technical skills start with primary school. We learn to read, write, and count and add up numbers in primary school, and that is really where the problem in our country is, because our basic education is dysfunctional and not actually fulfilling the needs of our children. That is the worrying thing. You can't become an engineer if you haven't learned in grade 1 and 2 and primary school to actually count and add up properly. That is the problem. Thank you, Madam Chair.
On the CEO's report, Honorable Chair, at the bottom, it talks about the increase realized in the area of professional registration. That is the growth of candidate registration by previously disadvantaged. But I don't know what are they comparing this with, because they are not figures. It's just vague. They are talking about increase without being specific. I think we need specifics. And also, accelerating registration of candidates to professional are still enormous challenge. What are the reasons of all of these challenges? Because they talk about challenges, but they said also there is an increment around that particular matter. On page 18, Honorable Chair, they talk about new students 100% target. We don't know what 100% of what number. Because in one of the reports, in the main document, they talk about 7 disadvantaged people that are given salaries, but they talk about 100% target that has been achieved. We don't know 100% of what. On the same page, Honorable Chair, SGB policy framework and CPD regulations, they did not achieve it. What are the timelines of it to be approved? And when was it submitted to the minister? Because now we are, it's a report. It's not enough to say they are waiting, because it's a two-way communication. The follow-up needed to be made. Also on page, they talk about increase in usage of database. Also target is 50% of that number. They just come up with 50% and it's achieved, and we don't know what is based on it. two advisory reports, two reports still being reviewed by who? There is a charge that they said it's being reviewed by who? And then they said, when was it submitted for review? And who is reviewing it? 3.2 built environment in September, it was supposed to be in September. They said they are waiting for approval and guidance for the Department of Public Works. When it was sent to the Department of Public Works, and what was the response? For how long are they going to wait for it? And then, last year, Honorable Chair, there was a challenge around the issue of the students that were unaccredited. Unaccredited because of the institutions that they were using, and they assured us that this current financial year they are going to accredit those universities. We want to know whether it has been, those universities been accredited. And then also, what is the time frame to receive approval from the council on the redesigned organogram and the organizational efficiency report? If they can maybe share with us it was. And lastly, Chair, auditor's report on page 62, section 17 to 22, Honorable Chair. It shows that there is still a challenge that is being faced by the institution. Because when you read that page 62, Honorable Chair, let me open it. It talks about the challenge around the issue of procurement, the issue of annual financial statements, performance and annual reports, expenditure management, as well as the asset management and liability management. And if you look at the trend, as per the auditor's report, it is when you look at SPE for the three consecutive financial years, they have been having a challenge around the issue of leadership, as well as the financials. But they are doing well around the issue of governance because these are the drivers of internal control. Maybe they must share with us what is it that they're going to do to fix the challenges around the issue of leadership and the financial control. Thank you.
November.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for the report. I think most of the questions are covered by my colleagues. Just maybe one or two. It's maybe my head is a little bit. It's about the two acting executive officers during the period under view. What was the impact of these appointments on the organization? That is one. Number two, there were senior staff that were seconded to the Department of Public Works. How long is the term of the secondment, and what impact does it also have on the work of the CBE? About the Auditor General, my colleague has said a lot, and the targets that have been not reached and indicators, a lot has been said about that. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Chair. Some of the questions have been covered by my colleagues, but I'll just browse on them. Like the issue of the bursaries that were offered, to which provinces and how many women students were offered the bursaries. And then number two is about the accredited institutions that are not resident. Does CDE have a plan or to move the students away, because it's a problem in our country of these unregistered institutions that and it's not the fault of the students, but I think somebody needs to make this the students aware, because it's only when they have to do the practicals that they are not aware that the institutions they went to are not accredited by there. And also it's about the challenge, one of the challenges that is seen in the country
about the low standard of the mathematics. Before there used to be also the higher grade and the lower grade, but now there's this math literature that makes it very difficult for the students to achieve what they want to achieve. Has CBE made any effort to discuss that with the higher education department? And the rate dressing of the gap between the black and the white universities in the country. There's still a very big gap. About the 2 DOs, I'll skip that one. And then on page 62, the procurement of the challenge, some of the contracts that were awarded to the bidders that did not submit a declaration of the past supply chain practices. How does that happen? And how do you intend to correct that in future? Thanks, Shepard.
Thank you very much. CBE, page 81, table 4. At 2008/9, there's no 2009/10. That financially is not there. Is it an error or what is it? And then you open on page 45 also. On page 45, on SACPVP, you start with 33%, then 5%, the last one is 50%. Can I get an explanation on that one? And also on CACQSP, is it 2.2% or 22%? Can I also get an explanation there? Thank you. Over to you. Oh, Mama Magan. Okay, Honorable Sanjay.
Thank you, Chairperson. Mine is on slide 25. Analysis of financial statement. I see here that they are having a deficit of 85.49% due to maximum utilization of allocated funds. I want to know how did it come that this should be 85.49, whereas I see only two deficit, that is minus 16, minus 4.14. But when in the total it's 85%. Is it a miscalculation, or can we be clarified on that? Also, again, on the disciplinary cases of different cancers, disciplining them on what? Why are they not complying? What is the problem? Can they please tell us again, because I see that some are changing, some are not at all. Some, there are no disciplinary actions taken against them. Also, my last point is on... that professionals don't comply with the requirements. Also, I see that some of them is 70% since 2008, since 2011. Some are fluctuating. Then my last question is on...
Mama, can we please attend to our cell phones? The cell phone's ringing here. Okay.
My last question is on slide 39. When they say picture of registered professionals, I see that they are putting on percentage, but and then they're saying 2% other. Which of these other? If they can clarify, thanks.
Honorable Sergeant.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you for the presentation. Mine is only one question on page 35 of the presentation under human resource development in terms of accreditation. It is indicated here that there were 23 unaccredited programs in 2009, 10 in 2009, and with 9 remaining unaccredited in 2011. So I actually don't understand if they are saying 23 unaccredited. in 2008, and they also say 10 in 2009 again. And then I was just wondering to explain, is it an error? They wanted to say 2010, why they're saying 10 in 2009, because first they were saying 23 in 2009. And I just also want to further know that with regard to the 9 remaining unaccredited in 2011, what are they intend to do in terms of this so that can get the clear picture in this regard? Thank you very much.
Honorable Tolle? Covered. Okay. CBE?
Yes, thank you, Chair. I think the executive will hang most of the questions because they are operational. But I think it's an appeal, but also to agree with the first honorable member who suggested that the question around the issue of bursaries be provided in writing, because I can see it came up several times relating to issue of demographics, the specifics and all those things. I don't think we have that information here, and if we may request that we provide that in writing before the end of this week. Also, the majority of questions, if you want to analyze them, you will realize that they go back to the issue of legislation and the powers given to CBE and the six professional councils. If you will talk to issues of discipline, CBE only comes in on appeal, because disciplinary issues, the misconduct and all those things, they take place at the ground level where the professional councils are operating and are empowered in terms of their six legislations. And they're only referred to us when they come to appeal. It's true that most of them relate to what we're trying to avoid now by finalizing the identification of it, that professionals will do they will carry work for which they are not accredited to conduct. I know of a case of a quantity surveyor who was found doing something which was not within his scope, and he was taken to task with the relevant professional counsel, and on an appeal the case was brought to CPE, and it's only then that CPE comes in. And it's very, very difficult sometimes for CPE to just impose itself to the professional councils and deal with the issues. But I think moving forward, we should use the platform that we have of the registrars and the CEO to find a way of dealing with the misconduct issues and professional issues of the professionals and the manner in which these cases are handled at the lower level. There was a question on technical skills, which was raised by Honorable Dreyer. When we presented, there was a slide that talked to the throughput, the students that come from higher education and they come from tertiary institutions. The truth of the matter is that the numbers are dwindling. They are dwindling. They are decreasing every year, the number of students who complete engineering, or students from higher education, from matric, or taking engineering, architect, and all that, they are going down. And the reason why we're conducting the state of the built environment, we actually wanted to find out. Why is that the reason? Because if we don't have that, the agenda of government in terms of infrastructure development is not going to succeed, because you won't have people to drive that process. And if you notice, there are two professional councils which, if we are not careful, we may shut them down, because the professionals that are there now are aging, and in the near distant future they will be moving out of that profession, and you won't have them, and the institution has been closing those professions like the dentist. I think it's only one institute in South Africa that is currently offering that one, and I know for a fact that when I was acting CEO, University of Pretoria was intending closing that school,
and we had to intervene for them not to close the school. And the big challenge in terms of built environment which need intervention from us and from government.
On that very note,
yes.
EXA was here last week. They said the numbers are dwindling because students are doing maths literacy.
I was still going to come on that one. We were discussing it yesterday with the CEOs. We were trying to finalize our presentation. That the other contributing factor which we may not have power on, it's the passing mark for matric, which stands at 30%. And what do you expect if you have a student who has 30% in maths and physical science? He can't make it in he can't. And I don't think we have powers over that. It remains a political thing. I think the honorable members will have to assist us on that one, because we take what we are given. If the secondary schools give us 10% as per legislation by basic education, there's nothing we can do.
But there's no way that you say there's nothing you can do. Have you ever engaged a minister of basic of higher education or a CETA to say kids don't have a geometry? Kids must be, it must be compulsory for them to do science, geometry, and not only concentrate on math literacy. That's also your responsibility. Because you know what is expected of a student to be an engineer. And you cannot say, no, it's not in your competence. No, that one I don't take. In your reports, annual reports, have you ever indicated in your annual reports that the numbers are dwindling because of this and this and this and this? I said to you earlier, I said to IDT earlier on, this your reports, students who are doing their thesis will consult all these reports. And it will be good if it is indicated in the annual report, so that people can see and load those programs to say, if kids only do maths literacy, they won't be able to achieve what they want in the engineering field. That's the challenge that is there. I'm just an ordinary woman from Limpopo. I know nothing about engineering. What is expected for a student to be an engineer? What is expected of that child? You need to highlight it.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. I think you are correct, Honorable Chair. I think there's the responsibility even to visit high school, to meet with grade 12, to give the career guidance and advise them. Because if they don't have road shows, they don't know, you know. And you are correctly saying, Chair, they are saying as politicians, we must do something. If it's not part of the report, how are we going to act on something that is not reported? Because when people consult, they will consult the report. And as I was saying, that the report sometimes they do not give you specifics so that you can act, so that you can do oversight act. Maybe it's upon themselves to take this up and then try to make roadshows and meet with relevant authorities and put it down on the report. Because even when you report in Parliament, how do you report something that comes from your mind and not in paper?
Thanks, I'm quite covered by my colleague here. Actually, the most important thing is for CBE to be proactive. Because they only come here once a year and explain and then try and tell us that this is a problem, this is an issue, this is a challenge. And what are they doing about it? It's not for us to go to these other classes. Actually, this math and science program should start at primary level, not at high school level. They should be. That's why we are. Everybody is concerned about the bursary. I mean, how many bursaries were offered to which provinces, and how did they set those? It's for CPE to be proactive and do the right thing. For the country.
For instance, we know that there are students
who go and do their practical, let's say at ESCOM and other entities. When they arrive there, their main duty that they're given is to make, especially women, to make tea. And they're not directed. Yes! It's true, they make tea. EXA did agree with us last week. Say a lot of women are making tea there. And at the end of the day, they raised this thing because I will always mention this. There's a lady who wrote examination 6 times. And she failed 6 times following. There are 2 gentlemen who wrote a letter to me. The other one even started to say, I would better commit suicide. Because I wasted more than 6 years. And I'm not suicidal. Why don't I die once and for all? Some will think they will better leave the country. And see, being here, not proactive, we will put the blame on you. And we said, and I don't want always to make a statement, to say, you know, this engineering thing is for die old dopies. They don't want these young ones. They are there, stagnant. They don't want to move. And they don't want to mentor the young ones. And we were saying, no ways. We need to bring in young blood that will be mentored by these guys. Public works is sitting with a problem. Problem of not having engineers. We are saying public works should go back to the basics. The basic is opening the workshops. How do we open the workshops when CBA are not assisting government? Maybe Lucas, you'll come in. Over about his voice then.
No. It will be better. You say that you need legislation to deal with discipline and all those matters. It's quite true. But what have you done? You've never brought anything to us. Did you speak to principal, which is public works? Why don't you propose a legislation? You must be proactive. We're sitting in the situation is bad. Really bad. There are some of these students that are running around the villages. They got certificates of engineers. They are useless, as Mama said. Come up with something. We are here to assist you. Bring the legislation to us. Thank you.
Can you remember in 2008 what happened in 2008 if we were there? An attempt to provide CBE with more oversight and regulatory powers of the 6 provincial councils was undertaken in 2008 with the introduction of the Council for the Built Environment Professional Bill. However, many professional councils, including EXA, objected to some of the provisions of the bill. The provincial councils also indicated that wider consultation on the bill had to be undertaken. The legislature was subsequently withdrawn in 2008 and must be reintroduced to Parliament by the Minister of Public Works. That's what we must push for. You are not pushing hard. You are a bandit man. You push. Take off your heels and push and fight. We cannot have a CFO and a CEO. I know we meant to be fighters. And you are sitting there comfortable. We put you up there as precious for you to go and fight for this fight. Must fight for our own children, our grandchildren. And not go there and sit and be relaxed. You cannot come and tell us you are failing both of them. Baba, CEO. Look at home end.
Let me finish my round because
okay.
The rest will be answered by the executive. Just to say, yes, the legislation we hope will be introduced on the bill to address the issues.
Still in the pipeline.
DPW is the driver, and we only contribute in terms of discussions and making input.
How can
and
we
all
talk about the pipeline that we don't even know how long the pipeline is?
Fortunately, they're here, Chairperson. They're in charge of the process. We are not in charge of the process, but we are making our inputs.
They are loading the bag.
I think they'll do that, the Honourable.
Yeah.
The other issue was that we are conducting roadshows in terms of the skills development, the bazaars that we are having, and the professionals that we have, the advantages and all those things. We are doing that. They will clarify them. There was one issue I wanted to respond
to. According to you, will these roadshows help? Because my understanding is that we cannot just go and conduct roadshows for the 12 students.
doing. It must start from the bottom.
They are taking place in our local areas. They will amplify that information, the negative. There was a question on town planners and land surveyors that there's no way they are featuring. In our select, we did talk to that issue that currently the six legislations of professional castles don't cover the town planners and the land surveyors.
It's out, it's reserved for now. Well, I can come in, respond, there it is.
Thanks, Chairman. I was responding to the question on town planners and land surveyors that they are not taking care of. We have noted that and we are proposing a new category of professions because they are not covered in the current six legislation of the professional councils, and we hope that they will be taken care of because they are outside and we do realize that they should be part of the built environment. Chairman, I will hand over to the CEO and the COO and the CFO.
Yes, thank you very much. Perhaps let's start with fight, and just to say that the fight is going on. It is going on. You can ask the six professional councils; they'll tell you that the fight is on. In terms of yes.
It's good to say the fight is going on. Are you winning? It cannot go on for 20 years. The fight is always the fight. Even last year, the fight is going on.
Yeah. In terms of, first of all, because the first problem that we face in the profession, you're correct, it starts at basic education. We've packaged interventions that talk to, first of all, that talk to school level, to say that schools we are targeting from grade 8 up to grade 11, math, science and technology support programs. But the challenge that we're facing is that these programs need funding. And that is one of the challenges. You know, we had our presentation to National Treasury about our planned interventions. We've identified partners that are successful in terms of Saturday classes, in terms of vacation classes, math and science. We have a program that we call Girl Engineering Program, where we encourage top performance girls to take engineering as an area of study. And we have projects and competitions that we run in that regard. We've got school level interventions that are quite varied. I don't want to go into the detail of that. Then at tertiary institutions, the issue of our bursaries, it's a question, the numbers, it's a question of the funding that we're able to get. We don't have funds for bursaries. We have approached the construction sector, and they are indicating that they'll be supporting us with regards to rollout of the bursaries. And on top of just the bursaries, we also have crafted an intervention program, a student support program, to make sure that students, when they are at university, we support them with extra tutorials. We make sure that they attend all the classes, all the practicals, that the throughput from tertiary institutions is improved, because without that intervention, that throughput will remain low. And when it comes to recent graduates, you know, the problem that you're mentioning, that candidates who are graduates but not registered yet as professionals, that they don't get proper workplace training. We have a program which we call the Structured Accredited Candidacy Program, where we are saying to the engineers and the other built environment professions, we want a program that is transparent, just like medical fraternity, where you know that every doctor,
will for 2 years go through this program, make sure that they don't do photocopy, they do the real work, so that at the end of the line, you get a product that is quality assured, that is similar, that is structured and state sponsored. So that is what we are effecting within the six built environment professions, because we understand that there's been no movement, or very little movement, especially amongst black candidates, for them to translate into full-fledged, competent, registered professionals. So it's a series of interventions at various levels. And Trey, we are making some progress. We've got challenge in terms of finances.
But is there any sense of agency?
Oh, yes, there is, Trey. And in terms of, again, talking to the Department of Education and Higher Education, the minister is busy with, getting a representative, a government representative from higher education to sit as part of our board or our council, so that the issues are directly addressed between us and the Department of Education, because they are a very important and a close partner to us.
But
so
when construction sector was under administration, how would they be able to help you?
Yeah, we've had a discussion with them. They have their contract. They indicated that their new approach now is to partner with state-aligned bodies, instead of partnering with service providers in the private sector, because they say that the main reason is the way they were handling private sector service providers. So CBE is a key partner of the CETA. They are getting their house in order, very much so. And we've got an MOU that we've just signed with them in terms of them supporting us with regard to skills programs, skills initiatives. And in government, also to answer the question around what are we doing in terms of assisting to capacitate government in terms of technical skills. We have a task team that we've set with Public Works, because Public Works internally, they need technical skills at a national level, and the various provinces during NIMEC also put forward the view that they need technical skills, Public Works and the technical department that needs to be...
There are gaps in the system. You should be forwarding engineers to Public Works to assist with the system.
We are looking at the whole public sector technical and professional capacity in a very holistic manner.
Honourable Jayla?
It's the last time I'm talking now. Can they give us a copy of that presentation they give to the finance? Secondly, in our last meeting with them, Mamangwan, if you remember very well, at the air offices, we recommended to them that they must place candidates with their professional council, and that it every professional council that's doing work for their government must take up a candidate. And we agreed in that meeting. Any company that does work with government must take up a candidate, but they must do their proper monitoring. And they've done it, they haven't done it.
Chair, on the last one, what we've done is that we are participating in the skills plan for the country's infrastructure development program. The 17 SIPs and the government's infrastructure rollout program. Within that, one of the policy propositions is to make it a condition of contract that a percentage of all contracts going to skills development. And what we've done is that we've set and defined the secondment when candidates or professionals are seconded to a project, we've defined the areas, the knowledge areas that they must cover. So we've done a lot of work in terms of ensuring that as part of these massive infrastructure developments, we also leave a positive human development legacy with those projects. Just ask the chair, in terms of also the public sector, what we are doing is that we've had a discussion with NISA, Municipal Infrastructure Support Agency, an agency that reports to COPTA, in terms of engineers, especially within municipalities. And we've got a program to support NISA with regards to technical skills now at a municipal level. So not only are we looking at technical skills for public works, but we're also looking and we've got project plans with the municipalities, all municipalities throughout the country.
Okay. Thank you, Honourable Chair.
But it's possible. I don't want to respond on that.
Yeah,
it's possible.
Mm.
Can you?
Yes, on the issue of meetings, remember that some meetings other members would attend, others won't attend. But the person that has attended SIS has consistently attended all of them.
Well, she's the chairperson.
Yeah, exactly. She's the chairperson of that. And in terms of claiming and not claiming, I did indicate that some of the members are from government, so they don't claim. Others, although they are from the private sector, they don't submit claims because they're doing it voluntarily.
Thank you, Chair. Let me address the two questions, one on the unlisted program and the other one on the criminal case. Honourable Chair raised a question around the issues of disciplinary cases at professional counsel level. Our concern is that the number of cases that we are seeing comes from the people who are registered and they relate to professional incompetence. Now, there are two things here. It's either there are registration loopholes during the registration processes, because if at a point of practice there are issues of incompetency, you then start to ask yourself a question of how did this person get registered? Was this person professionally tested for competency? And was the registration process and assessment process done according to the rules that are put before the council? Are there specific preferences for specific groups of people that get registered? So our CEO mentioned the issue around the second JC program. What we're trying to do is to demystify the registration processes, to make them transparent, so that we understand that this is the process that applies when you come for an assessment for registration. So that is what we're doing, so that every person understands and is very clear right from the onset what is required of them to qualify as a professional. The other issue of the unaccredited programs relates to, one, the issues of capacity at professional counsel level. You will notice that most of these unaccredited programs are in the professions of the digital survey and in the profession of the landscape architecture. We've got a really, really big problem with a profession that is seemingly facing serious financial constraints, which is the Landscape Architectural Council. They are not able to accept programs because they do not have staff and they do not have resources. They have relied in the last few months on the grants and gifts from the CPE on certain aspects of their mandate. Let me talk about the engineering profession. They have accredited. I think the report, as you may see it, was done at the end of the financial year, which is 31st March. Between the 31st March 2011 and now, so 31st March 2012 and now, some of the programs have been accredited since that report has been compiled. So there has been improvement in the engineering profession, all the programs are accredited. So that number from 9 has been reduced to, I think, close to 4 or 5 now. So there is a movement on the accredited programs. In terms of what are we doing to make sure that the public is aware, we intend to publish this information on our website. And during the roadshows, and during the current exhibitions, we also communicate with students and prospective learners the programs that are headed at each of these institutions. And the intention of our third time including the information in our annual report, because we want the public to understand which programs are not accredited. So don't take your charge to a program that is not accredited. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. Honourable members, are there any follow-ups? Mama?
The question is not answered, but the 2% of the registered professionals.
She wants to respond to.
Oh.
There was also an answer, sorry, a question that was raised with regard to the financial presentation, that the totals are not telling. But if you look at what the percentage is actually trying to show, it's the movement between what was in the previous year and what is in the current year. It's not an addition of all those percentages there. So that's why those wouldn't tell. Then, Chair, there was also an issue of what are we doing with regards to the issues that were raised by the Auditor General. It was highlighted that there's an issue on fixed assets as well as procurement. On the procurement, Chair, we have made sure since last year October that each and every bidder that we procure services from has got all those things, and we do not give any tenders or awards any bidder who has not complied with that. On the issue of the assets, we have moved to an electronic system which will ensure that the small glitches that we had in the previous financial year are cleared. Over and above that, Chair, we are monitoring all of the issues as highlighted on a monthly basis, and we report those to the audit committee, which oversees that all those things are implemented, Chair.
Thank you very much. Are there any follow-ups? In the absence of follow-ups, CBE, on behalf of the committee, members of the committee, thank you very much for coming and thank you for the presentation. But at the back of your mind, there's one thing that you must do, not to be, one thing that you don't want to be disappointed on. Make sure that our children achieve what they want in life. There should never be any blockages for our children to achieve what they want. If a child wants to be an engineer, let that child be assisted to be what he or she wants to be. There's a gatekeeping of which we won't allow. Government is struggling because it doesn't have engineers. I will repeat, our systems need engineers for them to come and operate those systems. And the issue of shifting the blame in the next chapter, I'm not going to take that. If need be, go and sit down with CETA. Go and sit down with the basic education minister or HOD or higher education and make sure that you unblock. A woman doesn't pray. We cannot have women leaders who come and say, no, we're not. Hey, there's no woman in this world. Only men that can fail. No woman that can fail. So please don't disappoint us. Go and work very hard. Thank you very much for the presentation. Baba Gela, you want to close? Yes, sir. Okay. A copy that was a question. Otherwise, thank you very much and go work and take a good work.